All right, so get ready, because today we're taking a deep dive that starts with armored cars and ends up, well, in medieval England.
You got that right. It is a pretty wild ride.
It really is. We're going to be looking at the case of United States versus Mafnas, where an armored car employee in Guam, he got caught basically skimming money from those sealed money bags he was supposed to be transporting.
Yeah.
Now, it might sound like a pretty typical case of embezzlement, but not so fast.
Right.
Turns out the answer to this case hinges on this really old legal concept called breaking bulk. And trust me, it gets way more interesting than it sounds.
It really does. And it's kind of fascinating to see how a legal doctrine from like the Middle Ages is still having an influence on criminal law today. It really shows how these legal concepts can change and adapt over time.
Absolutely, yeah.
But let's start with just the facts of the case. We have Jose Mafnas. He worked for Guam Armored Car Service, which was contracted by Bank of Hawaii and Bank of America to move money between branches.
Okay.
So pretty standard, straightforward stuff, right? On three separate occasions, Mafnas opened sealed bags of cash and took some for himself.
Okay, so he was definitely breaking the rules of his job. But why isn't this considered just like an open and shut case of embezzlement? He was entrusted with the money, right?
Well, that's where it gets a little tricky. It really all comes down to this difference between custody and possession. Think of it this way, like if I hand you a sealed box to deliver, you have custody of that box, but not necessarily the contents.
Okay.
You are responsible for getting the box to its destination safely, but you don't actually have the right to open it and do whatever you want with, what's inside.
So, like, if I borrowed your car to like run an errand, I have custody of the car, but not possession, because it's still ultimately yours. And
Yeah.
you could like tell me not to go through the glove compartment.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Okay.
And so in the Mafnas case, he had custody of the money bags just to transport them. But the banks still retained what we call constructive possession of the actual cash that's inside. They were the real owners, and those sealed bags, they were kind of a way of showing that, signaling that. So now this is where that medieval twist that we were talking about comes in. The breaking bulk doctrine basically says that if you only have custody of a container, but then you go and you break it open to steal the contents, well, that becomes larceny, that becomes theft because you're directly messing with, like, violating the owner's property rights.
Wait, so we're saying laws from centuries ago are actually being applied today? That's kind of wild. So by just breaking the seal on those money bags, Mafnas like crossed the legal line.
Exactly, yeah. That one act basically turned him from just a custodian into a thief, according to, the law. And it's not just some weird historical thing either. This breaking bulk doctrine is actually written right into U.S. Code Title 18, Section 2113B. It's a federal law that specifically deals with larceny from banks. So this concept that seems, medieval is actually still very much a part of our legal system today.
Okay, I'm starting to see why this case is so interesting now. It's not just about like, stealing money. It's about the legal side of how that theft happened. So because Mafnas broke that seal, he ended up getting hit with this very specific federal charge instead of a more general embezzlement charge.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
And that's really where breaking bulk becomes so important, especially in cases where you have someone like an armored car employee who's entrusted with transporting something valuable.
Right.
It helps prosecutors figure out if it's a simple case of embezzlement or if it's something more serious.
Right.
And it also shows who the actual victim is. And in this case, it's the banks, not just the armored car company.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So Mafnas obviously tried to appeal his conviction. So did he try to argue against this whole breaking bulk idea?
Oh, he definitely did.
Okay.
His main point was that he actually had lawful possession of the money, not just custody of it. He was basically saying that as an armored car employee who was handling these bags all the time, like it was a regular part of his job to have access to the cash inside.
So he was trying to kind of blur the lines between custody and possession to make it seem like he wasn't really committing this specific type of theft. Clever, but did it work?
Well, no, not at all. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals completely shot down that argument. They pointed right back to that breaking bolt precedent and really made it clear that the banks never actually gave up their constructive possession of the money, even though it was physically in transit.
Right.
Like those seals on the bags, they were a clear sign that the banks were still in control.
So the court was really saying that those seals weren't just for show, they were representing an important legal boundary.
Yeah.
Breaking the seal meant breaking that boundary. It was a very clear violation of the bank's property rights.
Exactly. And to make their argument even stronger, the court brought up a specific part of that federal law we talked about earlier, 18 U.S.C. Section 2113B. And the section deals specifically with taking and carrying away with the intent to steal or purloin. The court was basically saying, look, Mafnis didn't just, you know, misappropriate funds that he was already handling. He physically took that cash from containers that were sealed and he had no right to open.
So they were basically saying he wasn't just breaking his employer's trust. He was intentionally stealing from the banks.
Yeah.
That breaking bulk doctrine really made a big difference, huh?
Absolutely. It really did. And that's what makes Mafnis such an important case, you know? It clarifies how these concepts actually apply in today's world.
Right.
It's definitely a case that both prosecutors and defense attorneys need to know about and understand.
Yeah, I'm definitely starting to see why. It's not just some historical curiosity. It's a case that has real-world consequences for how these theft cases are handled. But we've just scratched the surface, haven't we?
Oh, yeah. We've laid some groundwork, but there's still so much more to talk about. We need to really dig into the implications this case has for legal professionals. And I think you'll find some of those practical applications pretty surprising.
Ooh, I love a good legal cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Our listeners, you'll have to stick with us as we break down this fascinating case in part two of our deep dive.
Welcome back to our deep dive on United States versus Mafnis.
In that first part, we really saw how that concept of breaking bulk, something that seems like from medieval times, played a pretty big role in a modern day theft case.
Yeah, for sure.
We saw how the actions of that armored car employee went beyond just basic embezzlement because he messed with those sealed money bags.
Yeah, that was a key point.
But now I'm really curious about like how this case impacts the strategies that both prosecutors and defense attorneys use.
Yeah, that's a great point. Mafnis actually provides some valuable lessons for both sides of the courtroom. Let's start with the prosecution side. This case really solidifies the reach of that federal law we mentioned, 18 U.S.C. Section 2113B, the one specifically dealing with larceny from banks.
So even though like an armored car company was involved, Mafnis was still ultimately prosecuted for stealing from those banks directly. But how would a prosecutor actually use this Mafnis precedent, you know, to build a stronger case?
It all comes down to showing very clearly that the defendant went beyond what they were allowed to do. Remember, in Mafnis, the court really focused on how the seals on those money bags were like a legal boundary.
Right, right.
So for prosecutors, it's about presenting evidence that highlights how limited the defendant's job duties actually were. You know, think about things like employment contracts, company policies, or any agreements that spell out exactly what the employee was and wasn't allowed to do with the property they were handling.
So it's not enough to just show that the person stole something. They have to prove that the way they did it violated those terms of custody.
Exactly, yeah. The prosecution has to draw that line in the sand between what's lawful custody and what becomes unlawful possession. And Mafnis gives them a good framework for how to do that.
Okay, I can see how this case could be a powerful tool for prosecutors. But what about the defense? How could a defense attorney use this to their advantage?
Well, one way would be to try to blur those lines between custody and possession. You know, a defense attorney might argue that because of the defendant's job, they actually had more access to what was inside those containers than the prosecution is making it seem.
So basically saying that unlike Mafnis, their client was allowed to handle what was inside, not just the container itself.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
They might point to, like, vague parts of employment agreements or present evidence that shows that accessing the contents was just a normal part of the defendant's job. But the defense attorney has to remember that Mafnis sets a pretty high bar, especially when you're dealing with those sealed containers. That breaking bulk doctrine tends to work in favor of the prosecution.
It seems like it would be hard to argue that breaking a seal isn't a clear violation.
Yeah, it definitely wouldn't be easy. And it's not just about physical seals either.
Right.
Remember constructive possession.
Uh-huh.
Even if there wasn't an actual seal, the fact that the defendant went beyond what they were supposed to do to access those valuables could still be seen as a trespassory taking, which is a key part of larceny.
So let's say, just hypothetically, Mafnis somehow opened those bags without breaking the seals. It still would have been considered a crime because he was going beyond what he was allowed to do.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's where Mafnis makes things clear.
Right.
It's not about physically breaking a seal. It's about those legal boundaries of custody and possession.
Yeah.
The seals are just a very clear visual representation of that boundary.
This is all starting to make a lot more sense now. The Mafnis case isn't just about one guy stealing money. It sets a precedent for clarifying the difference between custody and possession.
Mm-hmm.
And that has a big impact on how these theft cases are handled.
Yeah, you got it. Mafness is a really important case. It shows how these common law principles, even ones that go way back, can still shape how we understand crimes today.
It is fascinating to see how laws that seem outdated can still have so much weight in our legal system.
Absolutely. And that brings up a really interesting question. If we can take something from medieval England and apply it to a case with armored cars and banks, it makes you wonder what other seemingly outdated laws might still be out there. You know, maybe they're influencing our lives without us even realizing it.
Ooh, that's something to think about. We could probably do a whole deep dive just on that topic.
We definitely could, yeah. But for now, let's stick with MAFNAs and the things we can learn from it. It's a case that all legal professionals should know about.
Definitely. So for anyone listening who works in criminal law, what would you say are the biggest takeaways from MAFNAs?
For prosecutors, I'd say focus on building a strong case that shows how the defendant clearly overstepped their boundaries. You need to show that their actions went beyond what they were allowed to do, especially when you're talking about sealed containers.
Yeah.
Emphasize that breaking bulk element and really highlight the limits of what the defendant was allowed to access.
And for the defense, it's about challenging those boundaries, looking for any wiggle room in the definition of custody and possession, right?
Right, exactly. You want to look for anything that's unclear in employment contracts or anything that suggests they had more rights to possession than the prosecution claims. But remember, trying to overcome that breaking bulk precedent, that's going to be a tough one.
It sounds like we've covered a lot of ground, but there's still more to this case, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's not just about legal strategy. It's about the bigger picture of how the law itself changes over time.
Absolutely. And that's what we'll be exploring in the last part of our deep dive. We'll be discussing how MAFNAs shows the connection between historical precedents and how complex our world is today.
Sounds interesting. I'm looking forward to it. All right, listeners, stay tuned for the final part of our deep dive, where we'll wrap up United States versus MAFNAs. All right, so welcome back to the final part of our deep dive into United States versus MAFNAs. We've gone over all the details of the case. We talked about that breaking bulk doctrine, and we even touched on how this concept that centuries old impacts how legal strategies are used today.
Right.
But now I'm curious about the big picture. Like, what does this case tell us about how the law itself has changed over time?
You know, it's a really great question. MAFNAs shows us that the law is constantly evolving. It's like this living, breathing thing, always adapting to new situations, but still holding on to those core principles that make it work.
Right.
I mean, think about it. The breaking bulk doctrine, it started way back in the day, like when people were using horse-drawn carriages and transporting sacks of grain. But the main idea, like the idea that messing with a sealed container is a different kind of theft, that still makes sense today, even with things like armored cars and all those complicated banking systems we have now.
Yeah, it's amazing to see how something from way back then, medieval England, is still shaping how legal decisions are made today. It really makes you realize that the past isn't really gone. You know, it's still a part of our legal system.
Exactly. MAFNAs is a perfect example of that. It shows us how the courts try to take these old principles and apply them to situations we have today.
Right.
They're always working to make things clearer, like what's custody and what's possession. It's like those old laws are still talking to us, you know, guiding us as we deal with new problems.
This is making me think about all those law books I have just sitting on my shelf collecting dust. Maybe it's time to take another look at them and see what other interesting legal stuff is hiding in there, just waiting to be used in a modern case.
I think you should. It's so interesting to see how legal history isn't just about old books. It's about understanding where our legal system came from. And for all those law students out there listening, MAFNAs shows us that studying law isn't just about memorizing a bunch of rules and cases. It's about really understanding the ideas behind those laws, you know, connecting what happened in the past to what's going on today.
It's like those principles, they're the threads that connect everything in the legal world, all those centuries of legal thought.
Yeah.
And cases like MAFNAs, they help us see those connections more clearly. It shows that the law is always changing and adapting, but it still holds on to those important values.
I like that. Well said. I think that's a great way to wrap up our deep dive on United States versus MAFNAs.
Yeah.
On the surface, it might seem like just a small specific case, but it actually offers a lot of insights for anyone who's interested in how criminal law works, how legal ideas change over time, and how things from the past still influence our legal system today.
It has been a fascinating journey, for sure. We've gone through all the twists and turns of this case and uncovered some really interesting pieces of legal history. Thanks for being such a great guide.
My pleasure. I enjoyed it. And to everyone listening, I encourage you to keep exploring the world of legal history. You never know what you might find that could help you in your own legal work or spark a new interest.
Yeah, and who knows, maybe those discoveries will lead to a future deep dive. Until then, keep those legal minds sharp and never stop being curious.